From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by DataPipe Managed IT Services, delivering a comprehensive suite of managed services, including implementing, securing, and scaling applications designed for mid-market and Fortune 1000 enterprises. DataPipe.com.
The 36th edition of New Directors, New Films, a two-week event that showcases movies by new and emerging international directors, opens today with Paul Auster's The Inner Life of Martin Frost. Its four-member cast consists of David Thewlis, Irene Jacob, Michael Imperioli, and Sophie Auster. And Paul Auster, who wrote, directed, and produced the film, is, of course, the best-selling novelist, 14 novels, including The Brooklyn Follies, Oracle Knight, The Book of Illusions, Timbuktu, and most recently, Travels in the Scriptorium, a novel. He joins me now, along with one of his film stars, the wonderful Irene Jacob, and I'm very pleased to welcome them both to this show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The last time you were here, Irene, it was a long time ago. I think it was when Rouge opened.
Wow, yeah.
And that was a major film in your career.
Absolutely, yes.
Now, Paul, this is being described as an adaptation of the Martin Frost story you tell in The Book of Illusions, but as I understand it, the germ of this film goes back a lot further.
Yeah, it's not an adaptation of a story because I started this project back in 99, and it was always going to be a film. And then when I was working on my novel, The Book of Illusions, there is a film that the narrator sees, and I used part of the Martin Frost story in there, but it was presented as a film, always as a film. So I don't really consider this an adaptation.
Although it was a black and white film.
Well, it was changed for the circumstances of the novel, but what was taking place.
I thought it was that it was even a smaller budget than the budget you had for this film.
Yeah, we didn't have much, I can tell you.
Well, I can't imagine it with anyone but David Thewlis as Martin Frost and Irene Jacob as Claire Martin, the... I gather that the cast actually fell together fairly late in the process.
Well, not really. Irene accepted immediately when I sent her the script when it was finished, as did Michael, as did Sophie. There was a problem casting Martin. I had a very good actor who wanted to do it, and we had a scheduling conflict. And then he had to back out. And then...
Well, it's often the story.
Yes,
you know, anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then we had somebody else, and then there another problem came up. And right at the last minute, I said to myself, all right, who do I really want? Of all the actors in the world, who, if I could get anybody, and I said David Thewlis, and luckily he accepted right away.
And he was just trying to get in touch with you at the same time, so...
Yes.
And he's also, it's a kind of typecasting because he's also a novelist, isn't he?
He's about to publish his first novel.
He was finishing it as we were shooting, yeah.
Now, and often when we see love stories on screen, the critics will say, well, there was no chemistry between the actors. I didn't believe it for a minute. That's not the case here. How does that thing happen? Is it just a magical thing that it works with one actor and not another?
Well, this film is has also elements of humor and comedy. Of course, it's not it's a love story, but it's a crazy love story. It's an absurd love story, and it's a funny love story. So it's not... chemistry was not something that we were trying to work on. We were just trying to work on sometimes the funny incoherence of their meeting and how they meet instead of all the differences that they live in, meaning they represent different kind of worlds. It's not it's a Of course, it's a poetic story. It's not a realistic story.
Yeah, but we do have to believe that they love each other. And yeah. If we don't believe that, then everything else just falls apart.
Yeah, it's true. Well, it was very pleasurable to work with David, and I really enjoyed working with him and working on these scenes and finding the...
They got along together so well. I mean, David and Ihern are both such wonderful people, you know, besides being great actors, that I think that... Their natural warmth clicked on screen.
Although when you see David in Naked, the film that I guess made him famous, and he came here with Mike Lee when that film
Fantastic,
came out,
yeah.
He is probably the most scary guy on screen. That's what acting is all about.
Yes, that's right. But he's not that person. He truly is not that person in life.
And haven't you largely resisted working in American films? I heard that you turned down Indecent Proposal, is that true?
Well, you know, in
not that you shouldn't have.
No. Well, in a career, you know, you turn down things, you accept others, sometimes because you have to make your choices. It's true that I did here I've done a couple of films, like Othello or also independent films, or but yeah, it's true that what you're talking about was just after The Double Life of Veronique, and I was trying to... I didn't want to suddenly make big, big projects that I didn't really feel an identity for.
But you mean becoming an international star?
No, well, it's not that. Meaning, it's rather you meet people, you meet a project, you find, as you say, you know, these projects are based on meetings and how people, you know, rely to each other. It's the first charm that operates, you know, that you want to, you know, that it has to be there the first time, you know, just to say, oh, I like this person, I want to spend this time with this person and with this story, with this character. You know, it's so personal, the way you accept or refuse something, really.
Well, you've been doing a lot of theater, both in France and in England.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
So you got this script,
yes.
And you decided that this is an American film you were willing to do?
I didn't think it was an American film. I thought, well, Paul, you know, we
well,
met
Paul didn't
in
make
Paris.
An indecent proposal.
No,
but I was so
didn't.
Pleased that Paul would offer me, you know, to do something with him, because I really like Paul, and I was thinking, oh, what a chance to be able to have this opportunity to work together and to spend time together. And I read the script. I really liked it, and... all this seemed like a really great chance, and we had we spent 5 weeks in Portugal, and it was like everything was coming together in a very really a special way. I really enjoyed it, and
the film was done in Portugal.
Yes,
which must have been nice for you as well, because it didn't keep you away from your family as long as.
But what was nice is that I really liked the project. Meaning, you know, then, you know, of course, you know, you can't be all the time at home. But I make a right balance for this. And I chose this project because I like it. And I think it relies on a charm. And I think it's really also a portrait about writing. It's only Paul could make this film, because it's really talking about something he knows very well. And it's
the inner life.
Yeah, but it's not pretentious at all.
I mentioned it was a four-member cast, but Paul, you're really the fifth member, because you narrate, and you narrate as though you're reading from a book and making it clear that this is a very literary kind of project.
I think that voiceover narration is very important, because it gives it this fabular quality, because it is a kind of fairy tale, the film.
Well, you said Nathaniel Hawthorne. In one interview.
Yes, I always felt that especially the first part of the story, I don't want to give it away, but it does have a Hawthornian feel to it, I think. Getting back to the casting of Ihern in the movie, it was a wonderful illumination I had. It was back in late 2004. I went to France to do a reading tour in several cities. And in each city, I read with an actor who did the French, and then I would do the English. And in Paris, Irene and I did it together. And she was very pregnant with her second child, yes. 8 months pregnant, I yeah. think. And a couple of nights later, Johan was acting in a play at the time.
8 months pregnant.
She was acting in a play. She invited me to go. And afterwards, we had drinks with some friends. And then it was raining very hard that night. And Johan had a car. And she said, well, I'll drive you back to your hotel. And I said, thank you. And we get into the car. And she could barely sit behind the wheel, I remember. And it was... very funny. I looked over at her, and I was about to start writing the screenplay. I had the story in my head, but I hadn't written it yet. And I looked over at her, and I said, that's Claire. This is the person I want. I knew it instinctively and immediately. And I said to Ihan, well, I'm about to start writing a screenplay, and I think I have a part for you. Would you be interested in reading it? And that's how it started.
Yeah, and I think that what's fantastic about Paul is also that, you know, you're so busy writing and you have such an established, always great life with the writing. To make a film is it requires so much energy, and I love the fact that it was such a personal film. It didn't try to be, a film about something big or whatever. You made a film, and I think this is why I like that Paul is narrating the film, and we all liked it, really, is because it's a very personal object, I would say, even a portrait or something of a fantasy, and it's wonderful that you took the liberty to just tell it yourself, you know, without being the great actor.
Just published a novel called Travels in the Scriptorium, which can be read as a meditation on the act of writing and dealing with the blank page. And then this film can be read as the story of a writer and his muse. Both, I imagine, grow out of thinking about how you do what you do and how writers create something from nothing.
Yes, I think these two works are connected in some way. The novel, Travels in the Scriptorium, is a lot darker than this film is, but they both meditate on the question of how it happens, why it happens, and what are the consequences of doing it. And in a sense, with the film, you know, you could say, well, it's a story about a man who writes a story about a man who writes a story, and it just keeps going around and around and around. And what's real, what's imaginary, these are questions that interest me a great deal, because when you're writing fiction, you're living it so fully that sometimes the boundaries between the two blur in your mind. And I think it's probably true of acting as well. When you're living the life of a character every day, you it's hard not to take it home with you, I think.
Well, you're right, because you could say, oh, why a film about a writer? Again, so you could say, oh. But actually, it's good also to write about what you know, and then you touch everything. With being personal, you're able to touch much more than if you're in a general. And this story, of course, as you say, it really touched what is real and what is not, what is our dreams and what are our thoughts and what is reality, what is our imagination and what is not. And it's not, the limit is not really clear.
Right. And some people will get more of it than others, because as the film begins, the camera pans over a group of photographs, and people who know you will recognize you and your wife Siri Husvet and your daughter Sophie. And then we have the people whose house this is, named Restau, R-E-S-T-A-U, which is the letters of Auster rearranged.
Right.
So having a little fun there.
I needed family photos for the house. And I thought, well, why hire actors to pose for fake pictures when I had hundreds of family photos? So I took them over to Portugal.
Yeah.
If people recognize me, fine. It makes
and they recognize that, your voice and doing the narration.
That's right. It's that much more interesting. If they don't recognize me, fine. It doesn't matter. It's just people who own the house.
So I guess we should have done a brief synopsis of the film without revealing too many of its secrets.
All right. Martin Frost is a novelist in his early 40s. He's an Englishman, but he lives in New York City. And he's just finished a novel, And friends of his, the Restows, are people who have a house in the country somewhere. It sort of looks like Northern California to me. And they're traveling. They're abroad. And they tell Martin, well, if you want to go to our place in the country just to hang out for a while, you're welcome to it. So the film opens with Martin arriving at the house. And he's not planning on doing any work. He just wants to rest, take it easy. But no sooner does he get there than an idea for a story occurs to him. And he gets all excited about it, and he goes to bed that night thinking about the story he's going to begin in the morning. Lo and behold, he wakes up, and there's a woman in bed with him.
Not just a woman, it's Johann Jakob.
It's Johann Jakob. And,
we should
and,
all be so lucky.
Whose name of Claire. And so who this person is and why she's there really is the subject of the film. I don't think I should say too much more.
But I will say it. Over a dozen years ago, a Brazilian journalist published a piece called about Iran called The Muse Comes from France. that was a coincidence. Then also, Iran, you co-starred with Willem Dafoe in a film version of Joseph Conrad's Victory.
Yeah.
Another coincidence because Willem Dafoe was your first Martin Frost.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
I guess there is, this is a story within a story within a story.
Always. Yeah, it's true. Somewhere there is always a link.
Sometimes I feel that we're all in...
Willem introduced us, actually.
That's right. Willem introduced us in 1998.
But let's talk about directing films, because many writers have written film scripts, but it's rare for them to direct films. And when they do, they tend not always to be as strong on the visual as they are on the dialogue. But this film has some pretty beautiful images in it. Is this something you thought a lot about?
Did
you have such a great director of photography that you could just expect those things
to
pop up?
No, he was very good, but I worked out every shot, Leonard. I mean, they're all my ideas. Then communicating with the DP, whose name is Christophe Bocan, a French DP, who was very good and very responsive to my ideas. I think we made a visually beautiful film. It works, but all those shots, I thought about them a great deal. They're even to the down to it's a little pan of the top of a table, and you just see objects. There's a glass of water. There's a thermometer. It's a moment when Claire's character is ill in bed. But that glass of water, I was really thinking about Chardin, and I wanted it to look like a Chardin painting, and I think it does look like a Chardin glass of water.
Now, Ren, you've worked with some of the greatest directors, Kieslowski and Antonioni. Are you aware of whether a director really knows what he or she is doing?
Well, a director always has to have his personal approach, and we have to, you know, try to find a good relationship together. With Paul, I really felt like we had to act scenes that we are never asked to act, like I had to die and then resurrect, you know, and I've never done a resurrection before, and all, you know, and when I read the script...
Willem Dafoe has.
Sometimes the scenes were completely absurd, but yet we had to play it real, you know, with our normally and in a realistic way, whether it just can't be something you can imagine doing, you know. And when I read the screenplay, of course I laughed a lot, because there are really moments where it's going beyond usualness of and so to act with Paul, it was very funny, and Paul really encouraged us to just dare going wherever we had to, laugh too much, cry too much, being surprised where nothing has to be strange, and to feel completely normal when things are absurd. And all these indications of Paul were very funny for us to do, to go in this absurd line where we don't know what's real and what's not, and just to enjoy it.
Yeah, I think the two women, Irene and Sophie, had the more difficult parts than the two men, because they're embodying people who don't exist. And so there's no, how shall I put it, psychological foundation on which to build those characters.
Well, it's very different when you're writing a novel. Yes. You can just say it, and people either go along with you or not. But in a film, you have to get actors who actually yes. make it
believable.
Make some sense.
They have to incarnate those beings who aren't really there.
Well, we've run out of time, but I want to thank you so much and remind people that David Thewlis, in case they don't remember who he is, he was Remus Lupin in Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, right? Eren Jacob, one of the greatest film stars of France, and also Sophie Auster, who sings in the film, and Michael Imperioli of Sopranos fame, all in the film that's starting off the new director's new film series at the Titus Theater at the Museum of Modern Art tonight at 6 p.m. Thank you
Thank
both
you.
So much
Thank
for being
you for
with
having
us.
Us.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.